Hello, and welcome to this week's version of the Providence Journal Pick and Pop podcast. This is Kevin McNamara of the Journal with Bill Koch. We're going to talk all things college basketball for the next, well, I'll keep Bill busy for about 20 minutes. Bill, is that okay with you?
As long as you want, Kevin. You know this is prime time for college hoops here. We're getting into January, deep into conference play now, and this is where we make our money, as they say.
Well, it's a strange week in that neither the URI Rams or the Providence Friars play for a couple of days, so it's a chance to focus on the Patriots, in all honesty, but
sure,
to recharge batteries a little bit and for the teams to get healthy, which is really important, especially with the Rams. Also with the Friars a little bit. Jalen Lindsey is coming around a little bit, but we're going to start with the Friars, who are coming off a very impressive 74-56 win at Georgetown on Monday as part of the Big East five-game marathon on Martin Luther King Day. Certainly an emphatic win for the Friars at Georgetown. It's the season sweep of the Hoyas, and Providence has won six in a row against Georgetown. I think I put in my game story, the Hoyas should just call the Friars their daddy.
I did see that.
Old Pedro Martinez.
Pedro Martinez reference, yeah.
Red Sox-Yankee fanatics. But, Bill, I know you watched the game. Obviously, an awful lot to like about the Friars, but I think most people walked away saying, what's up with the Hoyas?
I think the simple answer is they're just not very good. And sadly, Kevin, you go back to the 80s, covering the Big East, and going to Syracuse. Did you ever think you'd see a day where Georgetown would lose six in a row to Providence at any point?
No, and please repeat your line that you had on Twitter. I can't agree with you more.
The way I look at the Big East, the history of the programs, there is no excuse for Georgetown as a program being closer to DePaul than they are to Villanova. With everything that they've stood for, everything that they built in the 1980s under John Thompson Jr., the brand that he built is being undone by his son, John Thompson III.
It's a really surprising development in my eyes. I think John Thompson III is a good coach. You know, I mean, he's had teams in the Final Four. He's produced pros. This group of kids just is not coming together. And actually, it's been really a three-year slide for the team. And really, they haven't had a legitimate point guard for 3 years in a row. I think that's, again, their problem. Their current point guard is a freshman, Jagan Mosley from St. Anthony's in New Jersey. He may eventually be a good player. He's a freshman. And to throw a freshman who needs to mature and needs to learn into a league like this right away is a cause for disaster, and right now that's the issue with the Hoyas.
Well, worse for Georgetown now are player defections are starting, which, you know, is usually the beginning of the end for just about any coach. You struggle on the floor and then your players leave. Isaac Copeland, who was a second team All Big East pick during the preseason, he's left. They had another player leave as well, Paul White
correct? In the preseason, yeah.
Who also, you know, was a very highly regarded recruit when Georgetown got him. And you wonder, you look at the rest of their roster now, is LJ Peak going to stick around? Will Marcus Derrickson stick around? Because this does not look like something that's going to turn around here very quickly for the Hoyas.
You know, they have pieces. They have some pieces that I would like. I'm sitting there watching the game, and I said, you know, besides Kyron Cartwright and Rodney Bullock, I think Providence would like to make some trades for guys, some individual pieces.
Sure.
You know, a Jesse Govan, you mentioned Derrickson and Peak.
If they could have gotten Rodney Pryor off the fifth-year transfer market,
you know,
somebody like that.
But it just doesn't work. It's not working. This group of kids isn't working for the Hoyas. And to make things worse, how about their schedule the next week and a half? At Xavier, Creighton at home, at Butler.
Good luck, fellas.
Probably the three of the four best teams in the league, three nationally ranked teams, good luck. And the Hoyas right now are 1-5, but the good news on the Friars is that after clearly being slowed by injury at DePaul, Kyron Cartwright has been great two games in a row.
Yeah.
I know you saw him in the Seton Hall game where he hit the big shot down the stretch for the Friars and finished with 20 points, 8 assists, and only one turnover. And then he turns around and nearly gets a triple-double against the Hoyas with 16 points, 11 assists and 9 rebounds. Billy, this is the kind of leadership that a junior is supposed to make, and we saw some of this in the non-conference. This is the first stretch back-to-back games in the Big East where he's played really one of the better players in the league.
Kyron battling a little bit of a right knee injury, tendonitis, apparently something he's been dealing with since the start of the year. He did say after the Seton Hall game that he felt better, that he'd had a chance to rest his body and get some treatment. And he put together two very good back-to-back games here against the Pirates and against Georgetown. We also saw the return of Jalen Lindsey, who did not play against DePaul. Against Seton Hall, didn't really impact the box score as much, but against Georgetown, had a very nice night making four threes, finishing with 14 points. Kevin, I don't think I can say enough, and I said this last night on TV with our buddy Yanni Caracas, I don't think I can say enough how impressed I am by Providence. The way they bounced back after that loss at DePaul, which could have been absolutely crushing for them. Kyron Cartwright missed a layup at the buzzer. They blow a 9-point lead with 2 minutes to go. That's the type of game that can have a lingering effect. And for Providence to pull one out down the stretch against Seton Hall, and then really to win going away against Georgetown in that game the other night, you know, really put the Hoyas in their place. Can't say enough about the culture that Ed Cooley has built within his program.
I totally agree. If you look at the schedule coming out of the DePaul game, you say, wow, they're in a world of it. You know, they could go on a long streak here, long losing streak, to pretty much bury their season halfway through the Big East schedule. Instead, with two wins, they're 3-4. Monster game coming up Saturday at Villanova, the number one team in the country, but at 3-4, you know, they're not going to finish last in the league.
No.
They have other winnable games at home left the rest of the way, and they've certainly proven that they can play with the middle and bottom of the Big East. We'll see if they can crack the top four, which is, you know, pretty well established with Villanova, Butler, Xavier, and Creighton. I think those teams have separated themselves a little bit. But the Seton Hall game, I think, was a real turning point for them to be able to gut one out when, you know, the Pirates didn't play well at all in the first half, came back, tied the score, and you would think are ready to go, and the Providence held them off.
No, it was a huge win for them, and you know, just looking at the rest of Providence's schedule, you have St. John's twice, you have Marquette twice, DePaul at home, you know, you get Butler at home, Xavier at home. Realistically, you could win five or six of those games. You do that, you're at 9-9. That's the worst you can be. That's pretty darn good. I think, all things being equal, Ed Cooley might have signed up for 9-9 with this group.
I think he would pay for a parade down Westminster Street at 9-9, and that would also make the Friars a borderline NCAA tournament team.
Right.
Right now, their RPI is in the low 50s, which is not where you want to be, but it's within smelling range. And 9-9 in a league like the Big East, you'll be in the bubble. You'll be in the conversation anyways. Obviously, who those nine wins come against is really vital. If they can crack, again, that top four with some of those, with some wins, you know, a Butler or a Xavier at home, those are just opportunities that we'll see if the Friars can take advantage of.
No, that's right. Those will be games at home that you're going to judge them by. We'll just assume that at Marquette they're going to have a hard time. At Villanova they're going to have a hard time. At Creighton, you know, even without Mo Watson, which, you know, was a terrible injury that we saw on Monday, torn left ACL. He's done for the year, the great point guard for the Blue Jays. But still, going out to Creighton, Kevin, you've been there. It's a very tall order. You can't really expect a win there. You know, but there are winnable games for Providence on this schedule, and we might not have said that after the way they lost it to DePaul. It's just so impressive the way that they turned it around here these last two.
Well, you know, I give the coaching staff credit. They haven't really expressed this too much. Ed Cooley has hit it a little bit, but, you know, Bill, their schedule is not good. It was not a good, fortunate schedule drawn up by the Big East. When you open at Xavier and at Butler, pretty much every team in the league not named Villanova is probably going to go 0-2.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened. And to start 0-2 and dig out of that hole is a challenge. And that's what Providence was faced with. And, you know, they're not out of it yet. They're 3-4. Again, going to Villanova, you would assume that's a loss that's 3-5. You know, you want to find a way to somehow scratch the 500. And we'll see if the Friars can do that. Just a little bit of a advance of Saturday's game at Nova. I know you've obviously seen the Wildcats a little bit this year. I'm interested to see how they are. They'll play at Wells Fargo, which I think is an advantage for the Friars to not play on campus. PC beat them last year at Wells Fargo. in kind of a fluke game. There was nobody there. It was a 22-inch snowstorm, which kept,
kept
the crowds
away. I was stuck in Washington
away.
For that one.
It's very fortunate for you to be stuck in D.C. It was not fortunate for me to be stuck in Philly at the airport Marriott with nothing to do, not even television, by the way, for a little stretch when the storm was raging. But Friars certainly enjoyed their trip with the big upset. I guess the easy question is, can they hang with the Wildcats?
Well, I mean, you look at Villanova, they have a bona fide National Player of the Year candidate in Josh Hart. He's just on a different level. You know, they Villanova at this point, Jay Wright just has it rolling. And that, you know, we go back to Georgetown's struggles. Villanova has all the machinery in place to be an elite program, and Jay Wright is operating it properly. You know, he's got good recruits, solid players, experience, good guard play, just all the hallmarks of a good college basketball program. He's got it all going right now, and you can see the product on the court reflects that every single night.
Yeah, the key for Villanova, and again, I'm looking forward to seeing them live just to see what type of cohesion and dynamic they have this year, because it is a very different team. You know, last year's team was really led by Hart, but really Ryan Arcidiacono, and he's gone, and obviously Hart has a chance to be a first-team All-American National Player of the Year. But to his credit, Jay Wright has kind of added some really key pieces. Eric Pascal, a transfer from Fordham. Mm. Dante DiVincenzo, who should be at Providence. I mean, come on, Dante DiVincenzo. A redshirt freshman has started to score now, too. They really, really shoot the three-pointer well. That'll be the number one point of emphasis for the Friars defensively. But, you know, in all honesty, I think if they can hang and make it a contest with 5 minutes to go, I think Ed Cooley would probably take that.
Well, I think the one advantage that Providence has in this game is that they did win there last year, and they're not going to be, you know, completely intimidated. I think Villanova beats a lot of teams before the ball's even thrown up. They look and they say, well, it's Villanova, and look at all this talent they have, and look at how well they shoot it, and look at how efficiently they run their offense, and how are we ever going to be able to stop these guys? And I think Providence takes a little bit more of a junkyard dog mentality into this game, especially off two wins, and they look at it and say, hey, no one expects us to win this game. Let's just roll the ball out and see what happens. We haven't played so well on the road to this point, aside from the Georgetown game. Let's see if we can attack this and maybe take advantage of a chance where no one expects us to do anything.
No, truly no. You know, not seen as an NCAA tournament team. They're seen as a middle to bottom Big East team, and they have a chance at number one. And, you know, people don't get a chance at number one very often. Providence has two wins all time against number one, never on the road. This would be probably the best win in the history of the program. Well, the biggest upset, I should say, in the history of the program if they can pull it off. So that game is at noon on Saturday, and then they will come home and face St. John's for the first time this season next week. So Friars get going again on Saturday. I'm going to switch to the Rams, who are also off this week, and get going Saturday. They will play at Duquesne on Saturday night?
Afternoon. Yes, sir.
Must-win game. You know, Duquesne's an interesting team, though. You know, they always have, you know, a few pieces there that you don't want to get going because they can score a little bit. But just talk a little bit, Bill, about the Dukes.
Well, it's one of those games, and I include Fordham at home on this list, where if you're Rhode Island and you do want to be an NCAA tournament team, this would be a disqualifying loss. Duquesne has an RPI around 200. They're going to be toward the bottom of the league for the rest of the year. You know, and you look at the Dukes just struggling mightily, and you look at Rhode Island, who dropped the game against LaSalle at home, 87-75, last week. They're down 15 points in the first half to UMass on Sunday, sort of staring into the abyss there, back-to-back home losses, and managed to gut one out, 79-77, which really, you know, keeps them, at the very least, in striking distance for that ever-elusive NCAA tournament bid. You still have a chance to play top 100 opponents. You still play VCU and Dayton at home. And you haven't had enough losses on the schedule where the selection committee will look and say, we can't really give them a bid on that fateful Sunday.
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the profiles of Rhode Island, is actually looks a lot more like Providence than someone else. They're in that, you know, 50 to 55 to, you know, 48 RPI slot. It's just that I think Rhode Island has a chance. You know, they haven't played well, you know, for a full 40 minutes in a while, but I do think that they have a chance to break out of that and put together the type of winning streak that every team, you know, needs to look good and be ready in March. And this might be the start, because then they come home next week for two games, I believe, and have a chance to put something together.
Well, they're going to play at Richmond, who is the only unbeaten team in the A-10 right now. Very surprising. That'll be in the middle of next week. And then St. Bonaventure at home, you know, which is going to be a pretty tough test. St. Bonaventure has great guard play with Jalen Adams and Matt Mobley, the Central Connecticut transfer. You know, but you look at Rhode Island in the UMass game, the two biggest positives you take away are E.C. Matthews and Hassan Martin. E.C. at 16 of his 22 in the second half. He only missed one shot from the field. And Martin, who'd been dogged by the quadriceps injury, it was clearly not 100% at Dayton, was clearly not 100% against LaSalle. He had 17 points, and more importantly, he had six block shots against UMass. He'd had seven blocks in his three previous games combined. And when Hassan is getting off the floor and impacting the game on the defensive end, that's the healthy Hassan, the difference maker that Rhode Island so badly needs up front.
No question. I was impressed with Hassan's play against a Massachusetts front court that's going to be good. You know, they have some good young players. Rashawn Holloway is a load at three. I don't know what they call him, but he's easy 325.
310 allegedly.
Yeah, I'll give him 15 more. Just that's like a, you know, a morning breakfast for Rashawn. He's a sophomore. Bryson Gresham is going to be a good player. He's only a freshman. Chris Baldwin is a freshman, and then in the backcourt they start a freshman and a sophomore. So better days are ahead for the Minutemen. And you know, you bring, you know, Rhode Island's tests up. You know, they still have to go to UMass. That's going to be a really hard game. And there's games like that left on URI's schedule that, you know, I think fans say, oh, you know, we'll sweep UMass. Good luck. You know, as we saw last week, those are hard games.
You know, UMass is young, but they play very hard. They've great length, good size at the guard positions. Dijon Giroux is the best freshman I've seen in the A-10. I'm going to have a chance to see DeMonte Buckingham next week at Richmond, who's also off to a very good start. But Dijon Giroux, just silky smooth point guard for UMass. He had a career-high 9 assists in that game. You know, great length at 6'5". Kevin, I know you saw him at Providence earlier this year. He's an NBA player in my mind.
Yeah, you know, and great advancement of his skills. He was a non-factor against Providence, which is pretty interesting. But that was probably his fifth game. And, you know, he just played his 18th game, and dramatic difference. You know, he has that natural size, speed, length, and explosion that you're looking for in a high-end college player and an NBA player. And it's going to be interesting to see how he keeps making those leaps and bounds in progress, because he has that type of ability. Clearly their most talented player. You know, I forgot, Bill, that they play two back-to-back road games. I forgot the Richmond game, which the Spiders are the surprise of the league thus far. I'm not sure who they play on Saturday leading into the Rhode Island game, but, you know, the chance to play a team that I don't think most people thought could be a top 50 RPI team, but they're playing their way into one.
Well, Buckingham is playing like the freshman of the year in the league, and T.J. Klein is playing like the player of the year
player
in the league.
Player of the year, sure.
You know, just, I had him on my preseason first team. I just like his all-around game. The other night he came up one assist shy of a triple-double. You know, he just has that ability. He's efficient from the field. He rebounds it. He can score it. You know, just a very advanced player. And you got Shondre Jones in the backcourt alongside with Buckingham, and that gives them three pretty high-level players. And I think, you know, if you're Richmond, you didn't really play anyone in the non-conference. You might have won some games against lesser opponents and built a little confidence, and you've really done a nice job of bringing that into the A-10 and winning your first five. And, you know, in the long run, it's probably a good thing for Rhode Island, because it has a chance to be a reasonably quality win. If you looked at it at the start of the year, a road win at Richmond was expected, and now it might end up being a top 100 win by the end of the season.
Might be very helpful. And, you know, the Spiders are good at home traditionally. Chris Mooney's a good coach. And I think the rise of Buckingham has given them that third guy that every good team needs, because both Davis and Klein had already established themselves as very good Atlantic 10 players. Going to switch a little before we wrap things up. We're going to do a little bit of both Ivy-centric games. I'm going to start with Bryant, who just lost to a Harvard team that, Bill, you covered the game. Harvard won 70-65. and you saw the Ivy League's favorite. I don't think there's any two ways about it. They were not picked as the preseason pick. Princeton was. Princeton is also off to a good start in the Ivies, but they've lost a couple starters to injury, and it's pretty hard not to think that Harvard is going to be the favorite in the Ivies.
To put it in some perspective, I asked Tim O'Shea after the game. He's played against Notre Dame. He's played against Gonzaga this year. He feels like Harvard has the best recruiting class he's seen, and I don't even really think it's that close. You're talking about a top 25 class nationally, three top 100 players with Bryce Aiken, Chris Lewis, and Seth Towns. And if you take a look at the list of schools that offered those three players put together, it's as impressive as you're going to see for a program outside of the Power Five. And that includes Gonzaga and Wichita State and Dayton, and VCU. You look in this game, and you've got Aiken, Towns, and Lewis combining for 41 of Harvard's 70 points. Just an outstanding group, but a young group. And you got a reminder of that in the second half. When Harvard was up 22, they shifted into neutral, and Bryant almost came back and got him. They were down one with about 20 seconds to go. Ikenna Nduba had a three-pointer that was partially blocked with about 8 seconds left. Harvard was able to make a couple free throws late and see this one out. But, very impressive from the Crimson. I agree with you. I think they will be the Ivy favorites going forward. And good resilience from Bryant coming off a triple overtime loss to Sacred Heart on Saturday, a game in which Adam Grant played 53 minutes and Nduba played 47. Grant came back in this game and played the full 40, struggled on the offensive end, but Bryant needed him on the floor, and they got everything that they could out of the guys who they put out there. It was a pretty gutsy display by them to even make this one a game.
Yeah, Bryant did not play their leading scorer in Nisrae Zuzwai. He was nursing an injury, and obviously it's a non-league game. Needed to get ready for a road trip this week. I believe they're at St. Francis, PA on Thursday.
Correct.
Bryant's an interesting team. The record is not there. I know that they're disappointed, but they've lost a triple overtime game. They've lost an overtime game on the road. And two other games that went down to the last possession. So I think what Tim O'Shea is hoping is that the freshman and the sophomore, team that he has, really, that's the bulk of his team, can hang in there and win some games in the second half with just some added experience. Because clearly there's some firepower. Defensively, they're not the best team. But, that usually comes last with young players.
Well, they're one of the 20 youngest teams in Division I right now. Their players average about a year of experience in their rotation. And the other night, without Nisrae Zuzwai, you're looking at it and thinking, well, this might not even be a contest. But you saw a very nice contribution from Sebastian Towns. He had a game-high 17, got a start. He had played well the previous game against Sacred Heart. He was in double digits off the bench. Big guy who you look at and you might underestimate at first look because he looks a little overweight and you won't think he's that quick, but he's physical inside. He has a knack of carving out some space and he can finish around the rim. Nduba has done nothing but get better since he set foot on campus. He's a very nice point guard, physically strong. Can get to the rim and make a shot. And Bosco Koster, who's sort of come out of the wilderness a little bit. I know he was on the bench at the start of the season. His shot is going down now. He's 4 for 5 from three the other night. He had 16 points in limited minutes. And he's a wing shooter who can stretch the defense a little bit. And I know Tim O'Shea has gained some confidence in Bosco going forward. And I always felt like he could be a little bit of a lightning rod player for this team. An emotional guy, sort of has leadership qualities in that way. And I think if he plays well, he can inspire them in some games.
No, it will be interesting to see if they can turn the corner and win those close games. They really haven't gotten knocked around yet in the NEC. And, two road games coming up again. If they can do some damage there, they do end with a very fortunate schedule down the stretch with a lot of home games. So we'll see what happens with the Bulldogs. And then finally, the Brown Bears. They opened Ivy play last week. Hello, at Princeton and at Penn. Probably the toughest trip in the league. Opening night was not pretty. Princeton really shot the ball great. They had 12 threes. They were 50% from the three-point line, 64% from the field in a 97-66 win that Mike Martin, he didn't have to say much to his team in the 36 hours that you have between games in the Ivy League, because less than 24 hours, I'm sorry. Because they turned around and went into the Palestra and really played well in an 82-70 win over Penn. And, we didn't see that game, Bill, but defensively, to turn around and hold the Quakers to 45% shooting and only 21% from the three-point line and force 16 turnovers, that pretty much shows that Brown got the lesson. I'm sure the film lesson off that Princeton game was pretty direct for the Bears.
A short bus ride that probably felt like an eternity for Brown's players and really for Brown's coaches, because when another team comes out and scores 97 against you, I get it that shots are going down, but that means that guys are getting open looks. And you know, when that happens, it almost looks like you're unprepared. And we know that's not the case with Brown. Mike Martin's a very good coach. You know, so to give up 97, I'm sure that might have hurt their pride a little bit. Came out and played, you know, by the look of the stats anyway, played much harder, much more committed on defense. They forced 16 turnovers against Penn. And they got a great performance from Brandon Anderson, the freshman guard who had a career-high 21 points against the Quakers. We've seen him in some games, Kevin. He's been able to get to the rim and either finish or get fouled. He was 10 for 11 at the line the other night against Penn. He has that sort of quickness, that slashing ability off the wing that can really open up defenses. And we know what Stephen Spieth's going to do. The other night against Penn, 7 for 9 from the field, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. A steal, a block, and probably sold some popcorn at the Palastro as well.
Yeah, and again, he was not much of a factor in the Princeton game, and that clearly was a game where Princeton throws 46 up on the first half. You're just demoralized. You know, you really can't take an awful lot from that game offensively because you're just back on your heels from the get-go. And you know, the good news is Brown now plays in an oddity in the Ivy League schedule, which is a bugaboo of mine. I just don't understand it, but they play one game at home on Friday against Yale, don't play on Saturday, and then the following week they'll play one game on the road at Yale. So only two games to worry about in the next 2.5 weeks, so a week and a half anyways, for the Bears. And, you know, Yale is not as strong as they were last year. I think certainly they have a chance not only to split but maybe to sweep Yale and really get off to a really good start.
Yeah, really unfortunate for Yale to lose Mekhi Mason at the start of the year. He's one of the breakout stars of the NCAA tournament last year. We get to see him play here in Providence. You know, almost single-handedly took out Baylor all by himself. You know, was outstanding. But he's out for the year with a foot injury. Mie Oni is one of the best freshmen in the Ivy League. You know, sort of rangy wing player, can make shots for Yale. I saw them at Bryant earlier this year, a game that the Bulldogs won, actually, you know, and looked good doing it, came from behind down the stretch. You know, that's one of their five victories and a reason why Tim O'Shea has hope, obviously, both for the present and the future. But I look at Brown and I agree with you, Kevin. I think they'd be disappointed if they can't get at least a split here. You know, Yale is one of those teams that if they don't want to finish eighth in the league, they need to sort of nick one here. They did that against Penn. So put them in position to sweep the Quakers. And you would like to think that, you know, Yale is another one of those teams that, you know, considering what has happened to them injury-wise and the guys that they've graduated in Brandon Sherrod and Justin Sears, you might want to try and jump in front of them and maybe, you know, sort of try and get that inside track and make an early stride toward that fourth spot in the tournament.
Yep, certainly looks like an opportunity for the Bears on Friday night. That'll be the only game here this weekend, as both Providence, Rhode Island, and Bryant are all on the road on Saturday. And we'll be back to check in for more college basketball here on the Pick and Pop next week. Thank you.